Trek. I'm Bruce Lee. I'm joined by my co-host BJ in person. BJ, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to do this in person. It's a little different sitting next to you, but I like it.
We are in person for the first time ever in the history of this podcast. BJ and I sitting across from each other. And what a moment to do it as we cross over, we cross the divide through the wormhole to season two, episode one. We are on a new season of Deep Space Nine.
And incredibly appropriately, it's called Homecoming.
That's right. Homecoming. It's the first in a three-parter for this series, which I understand is the first time they've done this, not the only time, but I guess we'll get some more later. But the first time they've done this, Homecoming, we are only reviewing Homecoming this episode. Right. And our general plan, tell me if I'm wrong here, is to review the next two together, right?
Yeah. Okay. So that is my plan. I think doing three would have been a little tough, and doing two and one would have been a little weird, just because I think of where the story breaks, this is a better break point.
Okay, great. So before we get going on the podcast, a little housekeeping here. So we are now venturing into season two of Deep Space Nine. Our plan is to just continue on with Deep Space Nine, maybe between seasons, take breaks, maybe like watch a standalone movie or other things in the Star Trek universe, and then continue on with Deep Space Nine. But I think our plan is not to tackle any large television series until we've worked our way through Deep Space Nine. So if you are listening to the podcast and you have ideas about either what you'd like to hear from us during those season breaks, mid-season breaks or in-season breaks, or if you have thoughts about our format, which has shifted over season one of our coverage of Deep Space Nine, right? We started with a more traditional podcast for Mangum Talks, which was more recap-based. We've ventured into just kind of talking about how we're doing. The listening numbers seem to be about the same, so it doesn't seem like everybody just ran away screaming when we made that change. But if you have thoughts about what you'd like about the recap or what you'd like in the format of the podcast, let us know. You can get to us at mangumtalks.com or mangumtalkspodcast@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. So that's the housekeeping, BJ. Anything on your end?
The only major thing on our end is, or on my end is, we're still doing the chapter by chapter read of Pottering Around. It's a lot of fun. We are well in our way of Order the Half-Blood Prince. We finished Order the Phoenix not too long ago. And look out on the radar. We are hoping to restart Mangum Reads again in the near future. I think Sarah and I will be working to cover a little bit more things that are related to her writering around, or her writering podcast. And so we're excited to start that up. So we're back in the realm of Pottering Around, really being the, redheaded stepchild of Mangum Reads, as opposed to a little bit more the other way around.
So what I like about that is that Sarah's doing a podcast, Writering, on the Mangum Talks Podcast Network, which is about writers on writing, writers talking about writing, or biographies about their writing. Like, it's this taking on a book about a particular writer and how they write. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do with Mangum Reads, I think, is if she's covering, say, Stephen King, which she's already covered on the podcast, right? On Writering, read a Stephen King book on Mangum Reads and see if we can make connections between how Stephen King talked about his writing versus what we're seeing in the actual product. I will say that when you started Mangum Reads about 6 years ago, I scoffed at the concept that I would be joining you for any novels or anything of any length. I think I joined one. I didn't read the product before getting on.
I support that decision too.
My engagement with it would be a little bit higher this go around. I've picked up my reading. I read a lot more now, so I'd be happy to join you all on some things here and there. So that would be fun for sure.
And we've talked about having sort of guest hosts every so often, where somebody that we think would be a little bit more interested in the book or short story that we're covering, and have them on to join the fun.
Fantastic. All right, so that's the housekeeping. Now we're on to season two, episode one, Deep Space Nine. This is the homecoming.
Yeah.
BJ, did you like this episode?
I didn't like it as much because it feels very heavy-handed. I like what they're doing, though. I like the idea of the episode a little bit more than the execution. And I think that, as I talk about a lot, the IMDb ratings reflect that it wasn't a stellar episode. And I I think that there are sort of minor tweaks that they could have had a much better episode, but I really like the direction that they're committing a little bit more to.
I was promised a Cisco beard. Cisco's beard is not in effect yet.
It's not.
So I guess I got to wait another season?
You definitely have to wait a little bit longer. I don't remember exactly when the beard comes. So Riker's beard is season two. Cisco's beard, I think, is maybe season three. But I think we are getting a better product already.
Yeah, I think it felt better to me. It felt like their budget might have increased a little when we went to the colony,
yeah,
where the Cardassian colony, where some of the Bajorans were being held,
yeah,
as slaves still. We got like an actual like on location shot. So they were out of a sound studio for that, which I'm not sure they left the sound studio for all of season one. So it seems like maybe they could do more on location shooting, some things to make the world feel a little bit bigger. So that was,
yeah,
cool to see. I also like the continued focus on the Cardassian Bajoran conflict. Like, I feel like when the show starts to get off the rails, like if I was in the writing room of this show back in 1994, my 9-year-old self, I think what I could have said was, guys, like, remember what the protein on the plate is? The protein on the plate is the Bajoran Cardassian conflict and the resulting attempt to develop and create the sort of independent state of Bajor. Go back to that and you're in your pocket. When you get, sometimes they get out of it and it's okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes they get out of it and we're doing hopscotch and we're meeting Rumpelstiltskin.
Right. And so I think this is one of the places where you start to feel the change between what the Next Generation was and what they can commit to with Deep Space Nine, which is a little bit more serialized storytelling and a little bit more commitment to this is politics. We're not trying to meet a new alien every week. We're not trying to explore space. We're exploring a small bit of space. And it's a very different style of storytelling that we still take a little bit more. We're going to take detours throughout the entire series, but I think there's a little bit more buy-in into that working.
So here's my thing, is that I feel like across television's history, we've gone from completely episodic,
mm-hmm,
television, which is you get an episode of the show and the story starts and ends at that episode.
Yeah.
The story's not carrying over from episode to episode at all, to almost completely serial. And the best example of this, which we're covering right now on Mangum Talk Star Wars, is The Acolyte, which is such a the storytelling is in such a vein of serial storytelling that it's nonsensical when an episode begins and ends. And so my podcast co-host on the podcast, I've been ruminating on this for like 2 weeks now, said that maybe part of the problem with that show is they got too far away from episodic storytelling. That it's basically a movie cut up in 8 parts, and it's, you don't know why you're beginning or ending at a particular week. And what that does is in your first 2 or 3 episodes, there's nothing that you feel like you're tuning in for.
Yeah.
It's all high interest credit card debt storytelling. It's all, we will explain this later. You just have to trust us for 4 or 5 episodes,
yeah,
which is a lot to ask, right? This show actually strikes a happy medium for me,
yeah,
where there still are in episode plots. Like there's something to be accomplished per episode, but there's definitely a through line in the storytelling. I kind of wish a show like Acolyte would get a little bit back to kind of how Deep Space Nine does it, which is, yeah, don't get rid of the season-long plots.
Right.
But it doesn't have to only be that.
I think that if you forced writers and show producers and everybody else to put up to be continued after every episode, like the Acolyte,
contractually mandated,
you have to commit to the fact that you're going to have to say this is to be continued. Like, it would change how people approach this storytelling.
Can we get Gavin Newsom to do that? Can you pass that in California, please?
I mean, yeah, you know, it would have to be taken up in LA. So and it's kind of funny for me, because when I would see these shows, I would hate to see To Be Continued at the end.
Oh, for sure.
Because it meant that, I mean, especially as a kid, like a week later is forever. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen in the next week. I mean, maybe now a little bit more people have a little bit better grasp of their schedules. But, like, when I was that age, I was just like, you know, my parents were divorced. I barely knew which parent I was going to be with. So, like, I have no clue what's going to go on in a week. Right. I don't know that I'm going to be able to see this. And even worse is a lot of times I would catch these on rerun. And so it could be the next episode at that same time slot on the rerun. But I feel like a lot of the time, they didn't care. They were just like, we're going to put a Deep Space Nine episode in, and it's not in order. It's just whatever's, you know, queued up on whatever they have. And so I feel like there was a lot more weight to telling a story over three episodes. It wasn't just a, well, this is what we're going to do because we have an idea for 8 to 10 hours worth of TV medium storytelling.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're going to do a show like The Acolyte, which is so, it's one story broken up in eight parts with zero episodic elements to it, then I'd say at a minimum, even in 2024, I need you to release it all at once. You cannot expect me to go week by week and to think to myself, oh, a week has passed, I need to tune in again and sit through it and then try to remember it and then wait a week. And you can't do that, right? And this show, obviously, in a different medium, right? Like in a different time where you had to catch it when you weren't recording it, you couldn't go back. So yeah, it was a big investment to do a three-parter. And that's why you mentioned like maybe we'd want to do, since this is a to be continued, we might want to review the second episode, but then you quickly realized, oh, hold on, it's actually a three-parter, so let's not do that.
Yeah.
And when you texted me that, I thought, well, it better be effing good to be a three-parter, multiple to be continued in 1994. Like, it's got to be great, right?
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. We don't know.
I think that there are a lot of really interesting progression parts, and I think what we're still struggling with is Jake is still rough.
He's pretty rough for sure.
And
Dad, that's my Jake impression.
I think he's getting better. I think some of that is like he's gotten quite a bit older since the filming of the first season. But the other thing is, I think that because of how television was consumed, and you know, we've talked a lot about this, but that a lot of the stories are a little bit more heavy-handed. And I really feel that watching 90s television like I watch 2020s television, where it's like they're very heavy-handed about who Lee Nellis is, and it's very like hit you in the head with what's going on with him, like what he means to the Bajorans, and so that part's a little tougher. But like, I know that the bones are there because I'm blanking on his name right now, but the politician is a little bit like, I can tell what they're doing, but
it's really,
you might, yeah.
It's the guy who played Count Dooku.
Yeah. Chris Fuller. And seeing him was hilarious. Also looking him up and seeing like what his, like, this is what he's known for was also really funny. Cause I was just like, wait a minute, he's been in a whole lot of stuff. And like, these are the things that you're pulling up for him. Like, okay, that's fine. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's always interesting with that, I guess.
So one of the things that happened in this episode is that as it got toward the end and it became clear that the Bajoran former Cardassian slave, the Bajoran, I'm putting quotes, hero, his story kind of came out to Sisko, and then Sisko kind of had this conversation with him. Sisko's like, hey, look, you know, they still need you, which I thought was like a fantastic point by Sisko.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you can still play the role. This isn't all dead just because the story got inflated. And then it was clear he was going to play the role, at least in the short term.
Yeah.
I actually kind of thought the episode could end. So with about 3 or 4 minutes ago, I was absolutely confused as to how this was a three-parter. I was like, they're wrapping this thing up. And then, of course, they give you the little angle, right? And it's going to continue.
Yeah.
But that was a dynamic I had during it. I also had this thought, which maybe this needs to be a new segment on the podcast, is my weekly question to you hey, BJ, why isn't Kira in control of the Bajoran government? Why don't they elect her president or prime minister or council leader or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, I'm confused. It seems like people are either power-hungry, self-interested, or not interested at all. She's coming at it right in the middle. She's a war hero. She also has relationships with the Federation. She's learned under Sisko's tutelage of how to, like, chill the fuck out. Why is it... Can we introduce this? Why isn't Kira... Why don't they just beam her down and have her lead the thing?
I mean, we can definitely do that. And as my prerogative is, I might make you answer that because you have spent time in local and, you know, state government. So why is it that people that are really competent don't always end up in positions of power?
Well, but I guess that's true, fair, right?
Yeah.
Is that they're like someone like Kira isn't going to throw her name, her hat in the ring.
Yeah.
Because she's humble, understands what is required of it, and probably expects somebody better than herself. Although it's becoming increasingly clear to me, there's not many people on Bajor better than herself.
Yeah.
So I think what it'll end up requiring is Sisko to make that determination and go, okay, she's the right person to either be on the council or lead the council, or the provisional government, and him to push. Now, then that starts to get tricky, and he was riding a hard line in this episode. If anything, he might have gone over it, of like how much the Federation is going to dabble in Bajoran politics.
Yeah.
Because I think it could probably kill her politically if it's viewed that she's simply a Federation puppet. But she wouldn't be. We know that.
Yeah.
But I do think it'd be good for the Federation long term to have her in that position.
I agree with you. I think, and I'm not 100% sure, that we do get a little bit more of the history of the Bajoran government during the occupation. And so I think that there's a... I'm trying to remember because, again, you know, it's been a little while, and especially when I watched this a lot when I was a lot younger, I could not care less about what the history of the politics of Bajor was watching.
Yeah, it's like
this
all we care about.
Yeah, exactly.
The only thing we're watching it for now.
What did the government on Bajor look like that the Cardassians handed over to? And what I guess is the thing is, like, it feels like we have a lot of entrenched politicians, and the handover happened really recently. So I think what we're supposed to take is there are a whole bunch of politicians that were sort of already in place. Some were a little bit too collaborative with the Cardassians.
Right.
Some weren't. And the ones that weren't mostly are still in power. And they're looking at these resistance cell leaders. And they're like, yeah, you're heroes, but you don't know anything about politics. And what we're seeing is like, yeah, but she now has a crash course in probably the best politics that they need for the world. But everybody that's already in politics is just like, that's not really what we care about.
Makes sense to me. I like your point that this was so recent that getting more information about who's leading the Bajoran provisional government would be really interesting, and like individual backstories, because like people are probably in power for the wrong reasons right now, and like across, like different wrong reasons, like some because they worked with the Cardassians really well and they know the planet really well. And it's like just easier to make them. And I'm talking about more administrative roles here, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like if so-and-so runs the sewer department and ran the sewer department of the Cardassians, you probably keep them on, right? That works its way up until you start getting to like the people who actually legislate and make the laws. And then it becomes more of a philosophical issue of how you interacted with them and how people want the Bajorans to go forward. So there's probably all levels in this government, at all levels, there's probably this specter. Like you have this, what is it called?
Yeah, spectrum of like.
Spectrum, yeah, like a spectrum of, you know, super collaborative, didn't mind the Cardassians, to all the way to freedom fighter and I was killing them.
Yeah.
So yeah, all that backstory would be really interesting. I agree with you.
And the other thing that I think might be the case is that we haven't even had elections yet. Like, there's been no nomination of anybody to power. It was just kind of the war ended, and I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the last Cardassians leaving were in a room with a handful of Bajorans that, like, were there and were just like, all right, I guess you guys are in power now. Have fun with that. Bye. And the Bajorans are kind of like, we didn't choose you guys, but I guess like, and you know, and it took time for everybody on the world and associated with it to find out about it and everything else. And by that time, they're 3 to 6 months in power. And so it's, I mean, I think what it really is, there is not that fully fledged out story. And so like looking at it from the angle of, I think a lot of this perspective that we have given of a lot of the other media that we consume, the books that we read and everything else, where it's just a, oh, that author, you know, that show has an idea of like what's been going on there for this amount of time. So then they can write about how we're interacting with it in this sort of sideways manner that we get with, you know, the people that are, you know, this, politician that's, you know, welcoming back Linas and the couple of provisional government officials that we actually interact with.
Yeah, they're building the plane as they're flying it. Yeah. That's pretty clear. But I think they stumbled upon something pretty interesting about like the transition of the Bajoran government from the provisional government
right.
to a more long-term sustainable governance structure. And I hope they spend a lot of time with it.
Yeah. And I think that they're figuring that out along with figuring out how much religion impacts the daily life and the politics and all the other things going on with Bajor. And we got a chunk of that the end of last season with Vedic Wynn and Vedic Barayal and sort of the opposite ends of the Bajoran religion spectrum. And it kind of feels like that was a little bit of the, here's some of the ideas about politics. And I like that they carried that through. I know that having Jake dating or trying to date a Bajoran girl is an easy way to bring that back. I hate the feel of how it happened.
It's getting a thumbs down for me. But not a visual podcast, so I'm giving it a thumbs down.
It was such a perfect 30-second, basically, way of reminding us that was a thing last season. And just, I think it was a really good way of inserting the information, and it was executed really badly, just because it was.
Yeah. So you mentioned before that, like, you kind of said it jokingly, but, like, the backstory of the Bajoran government, like, these details that we're fleshing out now were not interesting to you when you watched this the first time through as a kid. What were you watching it for at the time?
I think part of it was my parents watched it. I think part of it was I really enjoyed The Next Generation. So, like, I came off of another show.
But what did you enjoy about The Next Generation that you were hoping for, Deep Space Nine? Alien of the Week.
So, a little bit of Alien of the Week, but there's a chunk of Star Trek, The Next Generation, and they have it a little bit with Deep Space Nine, is that it's basically Fables. It's very similar to Aesop's Fables. It's like here's a question, and here's a bunch of ways to think about it, and this is some of the morality of the situation. And so I think that it is fairly good storytelling still for those things that is somewhat separate than like the bigger world of the politics, but like interpersonal relationships and the smaller bits are still interesting, are differently interesting, but interesting as a child.
Yep. Okay. I got you. So it was still a little bit of that stuff, but you just didn't want to get bogged down in details.
Yes. But also, like, this was definitely not my favorite of the Star Treks when I was watching it.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Right. And, and so...
Which I see. I understand.
Yeah.
For sure.
And Voyager, I think I liked a little bit better when I was watching it as a child. And now that I'm going back to it, it is a lot more action for action's sake. And it is a lot less interesting as an adult going back and watching it. There are still some, you know, good episodes, but for the most part, it's a lot more Alien of the Week. It's a lot more, we have a better budget for special effects and we're going to use them. And I mean, it goes off the rails in silly ways that I appreciate as an adult liking to watch bad movies, but they are definitely bad movie episodes. There is, I think it's even a multi-part episode of Klingons versus Nazis in Voyager.
Oh, boy. All right.
Like,
I'm already out.
It's great. It's the best. It's like Expendables. It is like you can't take it seriously, but it feels like they're trying to.
Did they cast Hitler? Please tell me they didn't cast Hitler.
I don't think so. I think it was I'd have to look it up, but it's definitely like this is just silly. All right, whatever. We're here for the silly. It's definitely not as good as the Negus episode. It is. All right, this is bad TV, and I can enjoy it because it's bad TV. It's not Hopscotch. Hopscotch just is bad TV it's not
enjoyable.
It's not silly.
Yeah.
It's just all right. Well, that was a thing.
Yeah, sometimes those bad things you're talking about, they play into tropes so hard.
Yeah.
That it becomes a parody of itself, and that's a lot of fun to watch too.
And so like and you can often like. The way I'm referring to the episodes is definitely not what the episodes are called, but like if they called it that, I think everybody would have enjoyed it more because it's like, all right, we know we're going to be silly. This has very little to do with the overall story. We're just being silly, and that's fine. Like you have Lincoln versus zombies, or you know whatever the series of movies are, which are like you know what you're getting into, and it's going to be like. B-movie heart, or whatever it is.
Now, Voyager was after Deep Space Nine?
Yes.
Was it the very next Star Trek TV show?
So, it was the very next one, and this was the era where I think they were on at the same time. So, I can't remember if the Next Generation at all interacted with Voyager, but not unlike the beginning of this of Deep Space Nine, where we had Picard interacting with Sisko. As I remember, Voyager left from Deep Space Nine.
Got it.
And so it was like a, here's the baton, like, here's the continuity for the world, like, you're leaving from the station that, like, we're still vaguely interacting with.
Are you listening, Lucasfilm? Please, are you listening? That there was some connection between these different series and how they handed them off? So that everybody feels like in the same world, you understand where the story's coming from, where it fits in. Ah, I appreciate that so much. I mean, some people might think that's like leading the viewer too much, too basic. Like, I appreciate that. Make it make sense. Connect the stories. I don't mind a scene where the Voyager's leaving from Deep Space Nine and then you go off and you have an adventure and a series with the Voyager and there's your connection point. Like, that's fine for me. It takes five minutes. Like, it doesn't take a lot of screen time to do.
And it's also kind of incredibly funny because... So we have the wormhole into the Gamma Quadrant, and through a series of unfortunate events, Voyager ends up in the Delta Quadrant. And so they're just like, okay, so we handed that off. We're not going to have any of that stuff because we're in the different corner of space. And
it's okay.
Like it makes perfect sense. They want to do their own thing. They're going to tell their own story. It was just a very funny, I don't remember if any of the shows that I've watched are in the beta quadrant, but like they've definitely went like, all right, we're going to do one different.
So let me ask you something about the plot in the episode. I got a couple plot questions for you. When Sisko basically authorized the use of the Federation's,
runabout. Yeah. The shuttle.
Yeah. Their equipment to go help free this slave. Sisko specifically, we can talk about the legality of it,
right?
But I think I'm interested in the personnel decision.
Yeah.
He wanted O'Brien to go.
Yeah.
And when O'Brien got there, O'Brien clearly had all systems go to shoot people and do what he needed to do. Talk to me a little bit about how you view that. That would kind of shocked me a little bit. Like I assumed, and probably, you know, but I assumed when he said O'Brien's going to go with you, like help you pilot or whatever, that if there was any shooting that needed to be done of Cardassians, it would be Kira. That there would be some, that he would be reserved, O'Brien would be reserved as a representative of the Federation. He was not. He was blasted. Now, I feel like maybe we get that answer by learning that slaves weren't supposed to be there at all. So the fact that the Cardassians were doing that was illegal to begin with. Maybe that's the answer, but it still kind of surprised me.
So I think we get a little bit more of this, but O'Brien is in some ways very similar to Kira in terms of the amount of combat that he's seen. So he is very much in the...
Knows his way around a phaser.
Yeah, exactly. Knows his way around a phaser, knows some strategy, does it, like, is perfectly happy to throw down, and as I remember,
does seem that way.
Does not like Cardassians.
No.
So...
yeah? So when he wins it, so Sisko didn't have to... So, okay, I like that point. That's a great point. That, like, basically, it was less, hey, O'Brien, here's specific orders about you need to go be aggressive, etc. It was more releasing the cuffs for O'Brien.
Like, oh, yeah.
Go do, like, I'm not going to be in your way anymore.
Yeah. And so I think we get a little bit of that where he drops a line like, I know what Cardassian prisons are like, or he says something like along those lines that he's a little bit more aware of how the Cardassians treat people mm-hmm. and under their thumb than you might otherwise, like without any other input. Like, it's more than just like reading briefings. And I'd say O'Brien, other than like he's the engineer and does stuff like that, he fits more of like the very senior non-commissioned military personnel that has seen all of the things. And so when you have a mission like this, like, he is the guy that you want there, and he's going to be effective. And so the thing that I find interesting is that there wasn't a little bit more in the, like, you're taking a leave of absence or something like that, which I feel like would have been a little bit more guiding the viewer to be like, okay,
it's about to go down.
Exactly. Is that O'Brien's music? Because, like, he's going to fuck up some Cardassians.
It did surprise me, though, when he was on the planet, he just started fucking blasting. And I was like, yeah. This is kind of stunning to me. But then we do get a slight reveal from when Sisko's talking to the Cardassian representative. Kira comes in and there's a discussion like, hey, we shouldn't have been doing this to begin with. This was illegal to begin with.
Yeah.
That gave me some explanation about it. But I thank you for clearing that up. That, like, I continue to forget. And I think it's because I haven't seen it before. But also because, like, who they cast. He's great.
Yeah.
The actor's great. But he also doesn't look physically intimidating to me. Right. So, like, I'm just going to need some reminders from time to time that this guy's kind of a badass in the world, because he just doesn't look like one.
Right. I mean, he very...
To me.
Yeah, I mean, he very much, to a certain extent, looks like a tavern brawler. Like, but not... I would say that back then he probably was a little bit more like, this dude can throw down, than now, when we have a lot of athletes playing these type of roles.
Sure.
Whereas,
that's fair. I'm 2020 skewed.
You know, when Rocky was a thing, like...
Oh, it's still a thing, my friend. Do you watch the Creed movies?
No, but...
Clearly not. It's a thing.
No, I know it's a thing, but like when Rocky first came out, like, he didn't look like The Rock.
Like, no, he was in shape, but he was a small guy.
Yeah. And so, like, if you sort of look at him with clothes on, and if he was less in shape than he was, you'd just be like, all right, well, that's just a dude. And now a lot of the times when we have people in that role, we're more pulling from people that are on serious workout regimens and people are that are doing real serious things to look the part as well. And I think that there's also been more of a push for people to look pretty on screen, that I don't know if it's a good trend. And I feel like when we've gone away from that, you have in many ways sort of more interesting television to watch. I think Game of Thrones did a really good job with casting, because not everybody looked like they're out of GQ or whatever it is.
No.
And it fits the show.
Dragon failing miserably in that regard. Everybody's gorgeous. Yeah, you know, I did something today that's very Brian-esque. Do you want to hear what it is?
I would love to.
Okay, so my neck has been hurting all day because I slept on a bed that is not my bed. It's been hurting all day. And multiple times, yourself included, other people I've interacted with today have said, can I get you a Tylenol or an Advil? And I was like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need that. I don't need it in my organs, whatever. Before we started recording, I said, sure, I'll take one. And now I'm sitting here like shocked that my neck doesn't hurt anymore. Doesn't that feel like such an O'Brien move?
Oh, 100%.
To like fight against the current all episode and then the last 10 minutes go, you know what? I will. You know what, Dr. Bashir?
Yeah.
Please come on in and fix me. And then he like looks around like he's discovered something. Like, oh, look, medical help actually assists me.
Yeah. No, 100%. That is very O'Brien. One of my favorite things, and I can't remember if it's this show or The Next Generation, but we find out at some point that one of O'Brien's favorite foods is field rations.
Oh yeah, of course.
Like, and of course it is, but like you're completely insane. Like there's all this multicultural food on this station that is like a way station, a port station, and it's gonna get the best, like some of the best of everything, maybe not like the best of everything.
Eclectic mix.
And what you want is brown chunks of food from a vacuum sealed packet.
But see, that's the type of the detail that I am going to need to continually remind myself that he's a military guy. He's kind of a tough guy.
Yeah.
Because I don't always see him that way. Because I have shipped them before and I promised to do updates, we will check in on my shipping of O'Brien and Dax this episode.
Yeah.
Dax, kind of absent from the episode. She shows up only to drop a few elbows on Cisco and tell him that his baseball is boring and that nobody ever likes it and that Curzon lied to him all those years. And then just sort of tells Cisco, yeah, I already know the story you're going to tell me. Like, you can save your time. Not much more from Dax. So there's no Dax O'Brien interaction. I have to think, though, since I'm fantasy booking the show, that she really liked what she heard about O'Brien's actions this episode. That when he went off with Kira, held it down, held his own, helped Kira get the prisoner back. I'm thinking Dax liked that.
Yeah, I definitely think that she did. It's also something that I appreciate that they did in that bit was they did a fairly good job of cementing that the crew is more tight-knit than they were.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't have vocalized that, but I did pick up on that. You're right.
And I like that they're not always telling you that, and they're doing a little bit more show, and that has happened. And so I think this is part of the move towards serialization that is things have, like, the crew will continue to gel, and things will happen. Sometimes it's on screen, sometimes it's off screen, but, like, a lot of those decisions will matter. Not all of them, but a lot of them will. And so instead of something like The Simpsons, which has changed, but like there's an episode reset, like there's very little change of any of the characters' interactions, no matter what their previous actions were,
right,
where now they've been working together for at least a year, basically, or, you know, however long it is. And so now they're better friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. It's not something, like I said, it's not something that I would have said it that way, but I think you're right that they are giving us hints.
Yeah,
that there's a whole other information flow that we didn't see in season one. I like that point. Another question for you on plot. So sometimes this happens, right? Sometimes we do season one, you have character A and B who are just buddies, just friends, all good, no, nothing to talk about. And then you get to episode one of season two, and all of a sudden they start throwing in little things. And you're like, wait a second, they're going to make the two an item. Like, I could feel it. That clearly wasn't considered in season one because I watched season one.
Yeah.
But now they're throwing a couple things in. What are they doing with Kira and my guy Quark? Two moments this episode.
Yeah.
Quark goes into her chambers. Clearly he's finding her attractive. She's...
Yeah.
I feel like I know the character well enough to know that she wasn't genuinely angry at him. She was getting annoyed that he wouldn't leave, but also finds him kind of charming and likes to interact with him. So she was being more playful than she normally. She didn't just punch him in the face, which she would a lot of people. And then she tells him he's handsome at the end of the episode. Quark is wondering, what does this mean? Like all of us viewers. I'm what this is a very strange shipping between these two. Never would have pegged it. What are we doing here?
So Quark shoots his shot. That is how Quark is. So yeah. I think what we're seeing a little bit of Kira no longer, maybe not just threatening violence, because definitely early on she would have at least threatened violence, if not like hit him a couple times.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think this is she's calmed down a bit and understands that Quark is charming. I think she said something like, you're just as handsome as you've ever been, and in her mind that's
not handsome at all.
You've never been handsome, but like
some
fires burning.
They're planting some seeds.
And so I think this is part of the everybody's getting along better.
Yeah,
and fair. Kira's a little less bossonite. Like, she's a little less, I'm gonna cut you, to anybody doing anything. So
I want Kira to be the leader of Bajor. Clearly. I've
discussed that
episode on this podcast. And I think that arc is Kira's to do. I don't want her doing that through Sisko necessarily. I mean, some help would be fine because she's established that relationship with him. She's earned that. So, like, if he was an ally, she has earned that alliance. But I feel like that's I need Kira to do that on her own, right? That's what I want out of that character.
Yeah.
It's her journey.
Yeah, yeah.
So, if they're going to go romantic with anybody with Kira, it needs to be someone like Quark, where it's like, they're not going to, if they started like having a romantic relationship, it would be once every 2 weeks after work, and Kira pretends like it didn't happen and Quark makes jokes about it, and then you just move on because she's got too much shit to do and he's got too much shit to do trying to make money.
Yeah.
Like, that would be kind of perfect. I don't want them to give me like a Kira relationship where it's like, oh, all of a sudden Kira's like cuffed. I'd be like, that's lame for that character. I need that character to go to Bajor and take over.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, it could work. I'm taking from your physical reactions to this that it probably didn't happen, but I'm nonetheless still think like some sort of like or you could just do no romance with
them. Yeah, yeah.
They'd be totally fine with no romance at all. But if you're going to do a little,
right,
then it needs to be something slight while she continues her journey.
Okay. So the part of the reason of my physical reaction is, as I mentioned a couple of times, I watched a little bit of the next episode, and I'm trying to remember where this episode left off. What was the last 3 minutes of this episode?
With regards to Kira and Quark?
With regards to Kira just in general. What was it like?
We did get the reveal that she was being replaced on Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
That was where it ended. It's the guy that was saved as the new, like, sort of ambassador to Deep Space Nine. She's being recalled to Bajor.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's where it ended. Okay.
I just assume that's not going to stick. Like, okay. She's in the cast.
Right,
so
of course.
I just assume it's not going to stick. Right. Maybe it does. I don't know. But, I mean, even that might even be better. Because then she could just, like, sort of come up for, like, a Friday.
Yeah.
Hang out with Quark in a holosuite. And then she doesn't even have to deal
beam
with,
up,
like,
beam down.
Like, doesn't even have to talk with other people about what occurred. She could just go back doing her job.
Oh, there is no way that Dax wouldn't find out about it.
Dax would. That's the one person I was thinking about it. She's gonna have to talk to Dax about it. That's for sure.
It's gonna be
really
probably the
war.
It's gonna be worse than like fighting Cardassians. Like that. True. That's gonna be the hardest thing that she'd ever have to do.
I know, but hopefully by then Dax is already hooking up with a married man, and then Kira can throw that right back in her face. So anyway, these are my. I've been watching a lot of Bridgerton lately. I'm looking at the romance of this thing. Clearly not a main focus of the story, but they did have like a couple moments with those two that I found.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Another thing in the show that I'm kind of curious what your reaction to was, what do you think about the circle being a thing? And just like how that was put in the show.
Yeah.
So we're talking about there's a terrorist organization that
so
far, supposedly a terrorist organization. We haven't heard of them doing anything like outrightly violent or anything like that.
Yeah.
But so far we've just seen them like spray paint, which is kind of really funny.
That shows up on their ship again.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that whole thing. felt like more serial storytelling. It felt like something that they threw in that didn't have a bearing on this episode and wouldn't, but we were supposed to remember for maybe the next 10 episodes.
Yeah. There's a part of it that I like in that, and I feel like we didn't quite get enough, and some of this is me, you know, not completely divorcing of like where things are going, but I think it puts a little bit better face to what we got in the end of last season of like, what is the support for Vedic Wynn's view of things? That like, we have a right-wing religious, like, Bajorans aren't going to hang out with anybody else. Like, we're going to do our own thing. Like, what is the support for that? Like, do we just have a religious demagogue that, you know, can sway some people? Or is there a little bit more to this than just her?
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's a good question.
And that you didn't pick up on that, and like, that's not what you're getting out of it. I think is some of it is like a, like, this is something that continues on. But I like that they at least put some things down that they can draw upon.
Sure. Yeah. I think when they throw stuff like in like that, I have a tendency to like hold tight, wait to see where it's going. Sometimes I'll start formulating theories, but other times I kind of stop myself and just go, let's just see where that goes.
Yeah.
But I do like it. Like, I have no fear this show is going to get so far away from episodic that I have a problem with it. It seems like pretty firmly rooted in that world. So, like, the more that they throw in those multi-season or in-season stories, yeah, I'm excited. This, it kind of felt like the season was planting a flag of, like, this is going to be about Bajor. This is going to be very Bajor heavy.
Yes.
Yeah. This episode. Maybe the whole season is. But, like, this or maybe the whole series is. But this season certainly felt like they were saying that's what we're going to get. Because there's multiple angles of it, right? There's the religious leaders that we got toward the end of last episode that's kind of carrying over. You have the political leaders, Kira's involvement with that, who will be the ambassadors, the circle, and like that kind of showing up. And then the Federation's involvement in the leadership of Bajor, right? And yeah, in that invisible hand, and if they're going to be influencing things. So it's a lot of different angles that they're attacking the Bajor piece. It feels like that's going to be the season.
I think they've done a really good job setting it up. So one of there are a couple of things that I wanted to touch on. One, which is a little bit rarer for me, but does come up every so often. When a character on a show shares your name, is it weird for you? Because like, I've had it a couple of times. It wasn't as much, but Saved by the Bell with AC Slater, in MASH, BJ Honeycutt, and it, like, every time, like I'll if I watch enough of it, I get used to it, but like, it's still kind of like a, this feels weird,
right? Never bothers me. I don't even know that I pick up on it anymore.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Lees all over.
That's fair.
I think the only one has ever hit my radar is Lee Majors. I was very proud. I always wanted to wear that with a badge of honor that Lee Majors also shared my name. Yeah, it doesn't hit me as much. But I probably notice it more for you than I do me. If somebody's named BJ, I'll probably notice that more than I would Lee.
Yeah. I mean, because I guess it's uncommon enough.
Yeah.
It just amused me because Lee Nellis and they call him Lee a couple times. I was like, oh, I wonder if that perks out for you. So one of the other things, and this ties in with one of our general segments, which is Odo's snarkiness.
Mm.
I feel like they got the humor right for this episode.
Okay.
In terms of, early on, we had like an interaction with Quark and Odo, and it was the right amount of humor. They probably could have put it in a different spot and wrapped it in a little bit better, but like, it wasn't, it felt right for the progression of their relationship, and it wasn't silly.
So I think that Odo stopping by the bar and having a 15, 30, 45 second chat with Quark,
mm-hmm,
very well could be the Norm walks into the bar and everybody yells Norm at the beginning of every Cheers episode. Like,
yeah,
you can do that every episode and I'm in. Like, yeah. I'm fine with, let's start every episode with a heat check. Odo coming in, speaking to Quark. We set everything up that way. Or it has nothing to do with the setup of the episode at all. But like that's the start of the episode. I'm cool with it.
It's so funny to me that you say that. And I think I've mentioned in the past, but there is a character in Quark's bar that is Morn instead of Norm.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And it is a nod to specifically to Cheers.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Yeah. And like he gets other things and
Quark does always know your name.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's
customer service oriented.
Yeah, it's important. You got to get those gold pressed Latinum bars. It is 100% a thing.
You don't have to worry about customer service in Quark's place.
Not at all.
Something's coming with his brother, though. We're gonna have a fight because his brother, he can't just keep mistreating his brother this way. Eventually, the guy's gonna snap.
Yeah. So the thing that I really liked about that part of the episode was I like that Quark is an honest swindler. When his brother left, he was still dividing things up in the way that he said he was going to do. Like, he didn't just, like, take the rest. It was a, oh, okay, we're going to renegotiate if that's what you really want. And instead of 6-1, it'll be 7-1. You've walked away. It's still 7-1. He's not just taking all of it and cutting his brother out. It was so interesting to me that they wrote it that way because Quark has a fascinating honesty to him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I was just kind of rooting for the, like, well, who put up the capital for this place? Who liaises with the Deep Space Nine leadership? Like, you know, it's like his brother's point, like, we should be getting paid the same because we both work here is not a very good point.
Yeah.
And Quark, instead of, and this is how I know they're going towards some sort of conflict, because Quark could have explained the reason for the pay differential in a way that would make sense to everybody, probably his brother included, unless he's, you know, just over the top angry. And we could have moved on from that, but they clearly were setting something up. So Quark was just a dick.
Yeah.
And that is going to further that story. But I'm such a Quark fan that I was like, they've got me all fucked up now because I'm watching it. And somebody says something like that to Quark and I'm like, well, wait a second. I mean, he's doing the deals. He knows, he has all the context. I'm like representing Quark in the story.
Oh, yeah.
Now. Like I want to stand up for
him. Yeah.
Which he clearly doesn't need, but like, yeah, that's how it was interesting as a fan of the show. That's how that struck me, as I felt like it was like a strangely unfair thing to say to Quark, and then I also knew there was setting up a conflict between the brothers, which will be interesting to see how Nog falls in that, right?
Yeah,
because you know if his brother does rebel and really pushes against Quark, it'll be, you know, Nog will have to choose sides between his dad and then also maybe his mentor.
Yep, it'll be. It'll be interesting. I'm very curious to, once we get there, for you to reflect on the various character arcs, because I think some are very clear from now, essentially like the probable path that they're going to take, and some are just like, all right, well, that was kind of out of left field.
When Odo gets stuck in an elevator and has to turn to goo in front of on a lady's sweater, and that teaches him about
relationships
and opening.
Oh, up. You can be a friend with somebody.
Yeah. It's the elevator goo.
Yeah.
It's the old elevator goo situation.
When you don't have a bucket, sometimes a dress will do.
What are you going to do?
So just the line, you are the enemy, like, was just, it's like, no, we're friends now. You can trust me. It's like, nope, I can't do that. You are the enemy, like, and you always will be. But like their banter and the way that they do it, I think it's just really great. And I like how Odo's snarkiness towards Quark is much more friendly than it was in season one.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I also think that this point that you've brought up in the podcast, that they have shown us enough that these two actually care about each other, that now the groundwork is laid for the check-in every episode that I like. If they didn't do the groundwork to show, like, when push comes to shove, Quark's going to take up Frodo if he can, and vice versa.
Yeah.
When they're really in trouble, they actually look out for each other. If they didn't establish that, then the little dialogue of, well, I hate you, you're the enemy, would be off-putting. It wouldn't be enjoyable as a fan. But now we're in on the joke.
Right.
So they've laid the groundwork. So yeah, now they just have runway. They have seasons with these characters where they can just do this over and over again because we know they like each other.
Yes. And I also just really like that it's such an interesting throwaway line that is so right, which is the rule 76 or whatever it was. Yeah. The best way to confuse your enemies is to make peace. And like, he's not wrong.
Well, it's just, he's not wrong. Love the rules.
Yeah.
Love the rules.
Oh, yeah.
Big fan. I'm glad that they're codified, that people have them online. I mean,
yeah.
But this one was so, can we take, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer, and like make it ours, but like not do a lot of work in doing that? Like, it's so close. It's so fucking close to it.
Yeah.
You just switch just a little bit to phrase it.
I mean, but I think it's also just a lot, in some ways, more interesting. Like, I don't know if you've ever been in an argument with somebody and then just, like, gotten tired of the argument and just been like, yeah, maybe you're right. And just, like, be done with it. And just, there are a lot of people that will look at you and just be like, what is wrong with you? And it's just like, no, like, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm just done. And just, like, how confused they are.
I do it on the Star Wars podcast, like, every other week.
And isn't it great?
Yeah, well, in a way. I mean, yeah, it's certainly great to have that release valve.
Yeah.
And not feel like you have to keep arguing.
Right.
Way. Yeah.
I mean, but, like, also, you know, presumably you're friends with your co-host. But
yeah,
like,
for sure.
You know, if you weren't, there, and even if you are, there's that sort of entertainment of, like, they're flustered and whatever, and it's just like, wait a minute, like, I thought we were going at it. And it's just like, no, like, I just don't care about this enough.
Oh, yeah, you pull the rug out.
Yeah.
You pull a chair.
And so, like, there's that interesting aspect to that rule that is...
I got you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is, like, when you're sort of arguing or play fighting is entertaining, but, like, when you're actually... like up against somebody and it's
off balance. You got them off balance.
Yeah, I mean it's very much like Sun Tzu, like, you know, don't fight where they want to fight. And so it's interesting to me, like, that there's a little bit of, oh, that rule actually, like, they're kind of joking about these rules of acquisition, but like they're really not far off of like well established like political theory and things like that.
Yeah, I think they're probably based, a lot of them are probably based on that. Like, I think this one is obviously based on your friends close, enemies close.
Yeah.
I think other ones you can map to certain ubiquitous sort of commonly known phrases for sure. I think that whole thing is so solid. I mean, yeah, you certainly understand how this has had a following for so many years. And I've only seen, you know, one season and one episode of television, but and I understand that this is also a little bit disconnected from the main lore and at times, like in the way that they tell the story and like what they're focusing on.
Yeah.
But you still get enough of the backstory to know this is fun. That's a fun thing. Like the rules of acquisition is just, that's just a fun thing.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of shows find stuff like that. And as long as you're relatively consistent, you get people following it that really, really like it.
For sure.
And
makes it real.
I mean, I think one of the biggest ones is NCIS. One of the main characters, Gibbs, has rules, and like they're numbered and they're online, and like everybody has buy-in. And I think once the writers found out about it, but it may have been even before that, is like he had other people in the show referencing those rules, and we get that a little bit with Sisko already referencing some rules of acquisition. And I like that they acknowledge that it's enough of a thing to have other characters be like, oh no, I know about this thing. I've read this. I know this is important to like you and your people. And so if I'm going to deal with you, as Sisko has to do, like he's going to find out about it. And so I like that it's more than just a, like, here's a little bit of a joke or whatever that we're going to put in.
I like it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you know, The Office did this really well for like a million different things.
Yeah.
Whether it's like the skill set of Kevin, whether it's like Michael's exact management style, or it's like what the individual jobs are for everybody in the office. Like they created a lore, right?
Yeah.
That's what this is. So you're creating a lore
in a
world around it. And that's certainly a way to keep fans engaged for long periods of time.
Yeah. And I like that it's both a small thing and a big thing. And I think that sometimes you forget the small things and how important the small things are. I think it's sometimes they're easily tractable, and sometimes it's also just like a fun thing to, like, you get to feel part of the in crowd when you notice like some of the small lore lining up.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it for sure. I bet you when we go to Dragon Con, I bet you we can find somebody who knows more than a couple of the rules of acquisition. Maybe we can make that our goal for us. When we get there, we'll share it on the podcast. We get there, we'll go to the Star Trek floor. And we'll see if we can find people who know a lot of the rules of acquisition.
So
probably won't be hard to find.
Probably not. I mean, what do you think we could find a poster or something with the rules of acquisition, like on the dealer floor?
I think we're gonna need to make a challenge for ourselves about like what are okay. These are like so. What we're postulating here is that the rules of acquisition keep something like that. That's like a detail in the world that they keep consistent.
Yeah.
That can actually be documented and tracked,
mm-hmm.
keep people engaged more long-term.
Yeah.
So to test that, right, is we go and we see if people are still engaged with the rules of acquisition. When we talk to Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to have to work out a couple different things that we use to see, okay, did we see this, that, the other thing? Like, we'll have a list.
So one of the things that I think Star Wars has a little bit of this, but I think Star Trek is in some ways OG because there are English Klingon dictionaries and there are people that speak
in Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek. Yeah. There are people that speak a completely made up language.
Fantastic.
that now
it.
Has rules, and like if you know there are areas of the fandom that are or of the show that are more fleshed out, but this is a thing that I bet we could pick up an English Klingon dictionary. You can definitely get one off Amazon. I don't know if it'll be in the dealer room, but like there, that's some of the interesting part that like, I think that Star Wars is catching up and like people have done stuff with like Wookiee language and stuff like that. But like, because there was like a whole period of time where like the real, like one of the few like community nerddoms was Star Trek, that people like did this in like the 60s, 70s era where they just like, all right, we're just going to make a language out of this. And I think that there also was friendliness with the people that were running Star Trek that were just like, all right, this is a thing. Like we'll incorporate like, some linguists made a language. All right, well, we're going to take that. We're going to use the dictionary and all the things.
There had to be a little cooperation, which I appreciate. That's somebody paying attention to their fans and understanding what will continue to hook people long term.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I like that. I like that they did that. That's really cool. So, yeah, that's something we'll see. Maybe we can find somebody who can speak Klingon. See if we can find people. That'd be great just to kind of see where the Star Trek fandom is now. So that's a good idea. All right. So anything else on this episode you want to talk about?
I think those are the big things. I think because this is a multi-part episode, I think we talked a little bit about it, but waiting a little bit longer to see like how this fits into the larger context and like what the Federation is doing. I think we should wait for that. Because like how it plays out is really important to like the bigger thing. So, yeah, I think we can leave it there and we'll do the next two episodes. So sort of unsurprisingly and very amusingly, like I never got this. You never really got this unless you read the TV guide, which is the name of the next episode, which is The Circle. So,
All right. So we're going to go right there.
Yeah. And so it's The Circle and The Siege are the two next episodes. So I think we'll do those together. I hope that rounds out the to be continues. I think that ends up wrapping up that like essentially a three-part episode. And then we get back a little bit more into the slightly more episodic rather than serialized Star Trek.
All right, that sounds good. One thing we normally mention we haven't yet is who directed and did the story for The Homecoming, directed by Winrich Kolbe, and story by Jerry Taylor and Ira Bear. And it seems like, these are folks who are all well-versed in the Star Trek universe or have done multiple things in the Star Trek universe, especially the director, Winrich Kolbe, who has done a lot in the Star Trek universe. So, and it felt that way to me, right? It felt like this is the standard crew is kind of running things here.
Right.
It didn't feel off the rails at all. It'll be interesting to see if that continues for the second and third part of this arc.
Yeah. And so Ira Bear is like one of the major contributors to the show. And so I remember, there's a documentary about Deep Space Nine, and he's like the face put on the documentary. So like, you know, like
he's a person who
he's a person who didn't. He's a major part of it. So yeah, that's definitely worth
it. Standard crew running it. We'll see if that continues. It's a lot of fun, BJ.
Yeah.
Glad to do this in person with you. That's a good thing to do. See you then.